Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about a new report that was done in partnership with the City and County of Denver, and it highlights how immigrants are both essential to Denver's rapid response efforts in the wake of the coronavirus, but how they're also especially vulnerable. This is due to gaps in the federal relief package, as well as language access barriers, and the fact that many are at an increased risk of COVID-19 infection because they're frontline and essential workers. Then we'll hear about the Black Actors Guild and their work in Denver to support artists of colour. After a brief comment line, we'll go back to the BBC for headlines at the bottom of the hour. Then, on How on Earth This Morning, Beth Bennett speaks with a CU professor who has developed a model estimating COVID-19 transmission in indoor air. At 9 o'clock, it's Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The group behind the citizen-led ballot initiative, Bedrooms Are for People, has filed a lawsuit against the City of Boulder to get access to the November ballot. City officials gave the campaign incorrect information about filing and signature requirements. Then, City Council members said that they would not be referring the measure to the ballot. The Daily Camera reports that the suit was filed on Monday by co-chairs of the campaign, Chelsea Castellano and Eric Budd, and they're asking that a judge compel city officials to certify the campaign's petition. They're also asking for city council members to give it a title and to direct it to be placed on the ballot for voters to decide on this November. The suit also asks the court to declare that the city's effort to retroactively change deadlines and signature requirements for ballot initiatives is invalid. You can find all of our coverage of the Bedrooms Are for People initiative online at news.kgnu.org. Vanessa Wilson has been named as Aurora's new chief of police. The Aurora Sentinel reports that in a 10-1 vote on Monday night, City Council approved hiring Wilson to head up the department. She's been acting as interim police chief since the start of the year. Wilson is the first woman to hold the position in Aurora. The appointment of the new police chief comes as Aurora is facing increasing criticism in recent weeks for its handling of the protests which are demanding accountability in the death of Elijah McLean, a black man who died at the hands of police last August. On Monday, Aurora police apologised to a group of black children who were detained and at least two handcuffed. During a weekend investigation of a stolen vehicle, Nine News reports that the group of girls ranged in age from 6 to 17 years old. A video that has now gone viral shows the 17-year-old and the 12-year-old lying on their stomachs with their hands cuffed behind their backs. The 14-year-old girl was lying next to the 6-year-old girl, also on their stomachs. They were in a parking lot in Aurora next to their car. They can be heard crying and screaming as officers stand with their back to the camera. A witness to the event who shot the video said on camera that the police also drew guns as they initially approached the car. Officers were investigating a vehicle theft, but they later determined that the vehicle they were seeking had the same license plate number, but was in fact from out of state. New police chief of Aurora, Vanessa Wilson, tweeted on Monday that an internal investigation has been opened and an examination of training and procedures is underway. Teachers in Denver rallied on Monday as part of a National Day of Action to call attention to the concerns that they're raising about the reopening of schools in the coming weeks. This is while the coronavirus cases are continuing to rise in many parts of the country, albeit in Denver, cases are plateauing. The Denver Post reports that educators in other cities like Chicago and New York, as well as Boston and Milwaukee, joined the teachers in Denver as part of this National Day of Action. The country's second largest teachers union, the American Federation of Teachers, has said that it would support the protests as well as being supportive of lawsuits and strikes over teacher safety as schools begin to reopen. Florida's teachers union has already sued the state's governor and education commissioner over an order to reopen schools 5 days a week for in-person instruction. And in the weather today, expect highs in the mid-80s, mostly sunny skies, but a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. Similar temperatures and conditions for Wednesday, but warming up a little bit for the end of the week, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Right now, the forecast is for highs in the low 90s, but that chance of afternoon thunderstorms continuing for the coming days. It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. New research from the nonpartisan think tank New American Economy, done in partnership with the City and County of Denver, is showing that immigrants are both essential to Denver's rapid response efforts in the coronavirus pandemic, but also especially vulnerable. This vulnerability comes due to gaps in federal relief packages, language access barriers, as well as the fact that many immigrants are at an increased risk of infection because they're frontline and essential workers. I spoke with Mo Kantner, who is the Director of State and Local Initiatives for New American Economy, about the report.
Since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, communities have really been vastly affected. Crisis has impacted every facet of society, from public health to education access to the local economy, and the communities we found that we are working with are grappling with how to ensure that all of the community members, and particularly those that are most vulnerable, really have access to the services and support that they need. So while all Americans, all of us are struggling to adapt to this new reality, where businesses are shutting down, schools are closed, access to healthcare is critical, the immigrant population is really both essential to the rapid response efforts and yet especially vulnerable to gaps in our social safety net. And a lot of the federal aid packages have excluded millions of immigrants who are here on a temporary visa or are undocumented. So states and localities and the communities that we work with, like Denver, are working quickly to not only ensure that the outreach surrounding public safety and health information is disseminated throughout non-English speaking communities, but also look to fill in those critical gaps in the federal packages so that response efforts can really reach all. So we, as a research and advocacy organization, wanted to work with these communities at the issues that really most acutely affected by COVID-19 in the immigrant community. So what are the language needs across the county or across the community so that, you know, everyone can understand the quickly changing landscape that relates to health and safety and business regulations? And then what is the role of immigrants in industries that are considered essential, so therefore are likely at higher risk of exposure? Then how and what to what extent do immigrants in the region access healthcare? What is the role of immigrants in industries that are most likely to be severely affected by the COVID crisis? And then what are the housing conditions for immigrants in the region? So we're trying to take a holistic look at how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the most vulnerable populations in communities.
So let's touch on some of those things in terms of that issue that immigrants are really serving in essential industries, and that definition, I guess, has really been broadened during the COVID-19 pandemic, because we're seeing grocery store workers, people involved in the, you know, in food manufacturing, meat packers. They're now essential industries and essential workers. And I know that these are areas, as well as many others, that we often see immigrants in. And yet they're also at a huge risk to the virus in those industries. So give us a sense, when it comes to sort of work, what you found.
Sure. So in the city and county of Denver, we noted that immigrants account for just over 15% of the overall population, that they really have an outsized role in some of these essential industries. So they represent over 23% of the transportation and warehousing workers, and over 23% of the workers in the food sector. So to your point, those working in grocery stores, those working in ag, those working in food processing, and then transportation and warehousing, again, being a huge industry right now, with everything being delivered, everything, you know, from packages to food to everything being more tailored to delivery and transportation. So with that said, we also note that immigrant entrepreneurs account for over 34% of all construction business owners and over 20% of general services business owners. And by general services, I mean personal services like hairdressers, laundromats, repair, that kind of a thing. So we're looking at the outsized role that immigrants are playing in these industries while recognizing that over 44% of immigrant residents in Denver do not have health insurance. So to your point, they are in these essential industries and are putting themselves at higher risk and yet less likely to be able to have access to health insurance. And that's why this type of research is really critical in helping communities and cities understand how they can help plug in where those gaps are.
So in terms of that and the help that is available or not available, either at a federal, state or local level, getting the information out, not just about the virus, but also about the support services is crucial. And so I know that you also took a look at what kind of materials are available and the need and the demand for that, particularly culturally sensitive and language accessible materials. Give us a sense of what you found.
Sure. Denver is already doing some really great work in this space. The Denver Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs worked to create emergency alert messages in multilingual videos and curated a list of multilingual fact sheets to really help assist with disseminating a lot of this health and safety information across the county. The City of Denver has also created a small business emergency relief program to help connect businesses with the most appropriate resources in the region. And that form is also available in Spanish. And then the city also administers two separate funds that provide rent and utility assistance to residents, regardless of their immigration status. So there are lots of ways that the City of Denver is really leading in this space. There are also some other examples that we can pull from communities that are facing similar issues with their immigrant communities during this time. So a number of communities are setting up relief funds for worker business owners that either don't qualify or weren't able to access federal relief funds. And a number of communities are working through and struggling with how to appropriately provide resources in a language that's accessible to residents across the communities.
What do you hope will come from this? Because I know this was a partnership with the City and County of Denver. So there's obviously an impetus on the part of policymakers and officials here at a local level to really understand the scenarios that we're dealing with here when it comes to immigrants and the COVID-19 pandemic, but also hopefully maybe make things a little bit better. So ultimately, what do you think will come of this research?
Sure. So again, the City of Denver is already leading in a number of policies on this. And I think where the research really comes into play is just being helpful in specifically targeting how and the most efficient way to provide the resources that the city already knows that it needs. This resource that we're able to provide for them is able to, again, help them hone in exactly on what those needs are and how they can better and most appropriately provide the resources that they know that they need to assist the community members with. So the hope is to assist policymakers, and these policymakers already sort of understand kind of what the needs are within the community, but really just help them hone and really target exactly how they can most effectively and efficiently provide those resources across the community. So that's the hope from the New American Economy, that the City and County of Denver is able to use this research report to continue and specifically target the policies for communities that really need this work that they've already identified as necessary.
That's Mo Kantner. She's the Director of State and Local Initiatives for New American Economy. That's the group that's just partnered with the City and County of Denver in a report to highlight how immigrants are, on the one hand, essential to Denver's rapid response efforts amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, but on the other hand, especially vulnerable due to various different gaps and the fact that they're at a higher risk of infection because they're often working in frontline and essential work. Well, you can read that full report at research.newamericaneconomy.org. That's research.newamericaneconomy.org.
Support comes from Outworld Brewing, reinventing the brew pub experience through sci-fi fantasy themes. Located in between Highway 287 and I-25 on Highway 119 in Longmont, offering dine-in, takeout, and delivery. More information at outworldbrewing.com.
The recent Black Lives Matter protests aren't just shining a spotlight on what's happening with policing. They're also shining a spotlight on the inequalities that are rampant through society and the fact that so many industries are just not inclusive and not representative and not accessible to people of colour. Well, there are many organisations that are working to counter that. One organisation in Denver that is working to increase representation of Black artists is the Black Actors Guild. They've been doing this for more than a decade. I spoke with Christina Petaluga with the Black Actors Guild.
The Black Actors Guild is an arts and education company in Colorado. It just had its, we just had our 10-year anniversary in December of last year. So they've been just working really hard. I've been a part of the guild for 6 years now. And yeah, we do art and education, but we also do like put on productions. We have improv shows. And we're just an overall conglomerate of artists in Denver that are trying to bring the arts to people of color and and teach young people about theater.
Give us a sense of how people of color and particularly Black actors and artists are either represented or not represented in the arts community. And I know that's a big community, but if we talk about arts in general, do you see people enough representation?
I definitely don't. I think that's also part of, not I think, I know that's part of why I did this project as well. I'm just always looking for people that look like me or that look like my cousins and people that I love. And I don't often see it a lot of the times. And this has finally recently come to light in like Hollywood and stuff with people that are, you know, white people playing people of color and, you know, even just voiceover actors or actual like characters in movies that are white people playing Black people. And in classical art, there's not a lot of depictions of Black and brown people in a positive lighting. So there's a huge lack of that. And I think that's part of why a lot of like people stray away from art or like fine arts and things like that, because they don't see themselves represented. And I really think it's time for that to change, because Black and brown people are innovators and we're extremely creative people. And I just think it's time for that to be shown on a broader level, and so that other people can really see that and appreciate it.
You know, you mentioned that when you were growing up, you didn't see people who looked like you or your cousins represented. And so, you know, the broader implications for society of not having enough representation in the arts that are very visible to people, but also maybe either in arts management or in other parts of the creative process. And then for young people who themselves are artists, if they don't see themselves represented in each part of the creative process, take us through the implications of that.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think it can make someone, especially like a woman artist of color, it can make them very uncomfortable if they go and they have a pitch for like a certain company or they want to work with people, but they go and it's a full board of like white men or, you know, just white men and women. And it's kind of like, how am I going to successfully translate my vision with people that can't resonate with the topics I'm talking about? You know what I mean? So I think it's very important to get people of color in all levels of that, in the creative process, in the production process, in the media process. All of that is very important so that it can come across in the way that that person of color wants for it too. Because I'm not saying that white people can't make it genuine. I'm just saying they can't fully like bring it to fruition in the way that another person of color could, because they've had similar experiences. So I think it's very important for us to get people of color in those positions of power and in those positions of production, so that when artists of color come to them, you know, in looking to collaborate, it will be, you know, in kind of like an understanding and just a more comfortable situation, and they can feel like their authentic vision will come to light.
I suppose the other side of that is, if we're not seeing representation and genuine representation at all level in the art of people of colour, and yet the art is supposedly reflecting their experiences, I mean, what we're really talking about is appropriation. And, you know, it's well documented that white people have appropriated particularly black culture for so long without giving dues. And certainly making access and making diversity an issue and making inclusion an issue.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. There's a lot of instances where like local artists or lesser known artists will have an idea and they'll release a project. And because it's not released on a large scale, you know, it's not pointed out as a point of reference for these larger magazines, because these larger magazines are scouring and looking for ideas, and then they take them from artists of color and they end up putting them on this broad scale and taking the credit for it. That is definitely appropriation. It is unfair. And I'm really hoping that that starts to change. I've started to see a bit of change recently with things being brought to light, but and it's the fact that the appropriation doesn't get called out. Like, a lot of people that do have that are in places of power, they'll see it, but they'll decide to not say anything, even if they know that it's something that isn't sitting right with them. And I think that now people really need to hold themselves accountable, especially like our white allies and folks of that nature. Like, if they see something and they're in higher power and they see like, okay, this is appropriation, or I saw this on an artist's Instagram and they, you know, we didn't credit them for inspiring us. Like, I really feel like that is important to start holding each other accountable for that, because we're just so used to just kind of turning our backs on it and being like, well, that's how it's always been, so I guess it's whatever. But it's really not whatever. You know, Black and brown people work so hard and they have so many ideas, and they don't get the credit that's due to them, because, you know, non-POC will take that and kind of run with the ideas. And I just think it's really the time has come for people to hold themselves accountable and to really call themselves out, even if it was something from years ago where they're like, wow, I really, you know, I had those box braids in my hair and I really thought that was okay. Like, no, it's time to hold yourself accountable, call yourself out, and also thank people for calling you out. Instead of getting defensive, take it as a learning lesson. You know, you're learning. It may be something that you didn't fully know that wasn't okay, but now that someone, a person of color, has educated you on that, you take that. You say, I'm sorry for my past transgressions, and I will do better, and I will try to help others do better. I think that's extremely important to see any kind of change with the appropriation and the allowance of appropriation in mainstream media.
That's Christina Petaluga, who's with the Black Actors Guild. For the last decade, they have been a platform for artists of color in the Denver area. And you can find out more information about what they're doing and a lot of the really exciting events that they have going on. Their website is blackactorsguild.org, blackactorsguild.org. There are a lot of events happening now virtually, including some summer camps that they're offering for youth as well. And one of their latest projects is a photography project, Are We Still Cool?, which explores versions of masculinity amongst men of color. What does it mean? And a new show is coming up just later this week called Hype Man, a play by Idris Goodwin. And so you can find out more about all of their projects and their work around equity and inclusion. Their website again, blackactorsguild.org. It is 8:29. You're listening to KGNU, and it's time now for the comment line.
Yes, hello. My comment is about last Monday's Opera Box. Thank you very much to Mr. Rene Dill. It was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And my name is Katharina Ortmann.
And that's the comment line. Short and sweet this week, but you can leave a comment about shows that you might love, might like, or you just want to talk about. Leave your message anytime at 303-447-9911. 303-447-9911. And we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings.